You're now listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, broadcasting from sunny Orange County, California. Filmmaker, journalist, and film historian, Paul Booth.
Aloha. Welcome to Talking Pictures with Paul Booth. I'm your host. So grateful to be here today. We're going to be joined by Oscar-nominated director this year for Best Live-Action Short Film, Mr. Brian Buckley. The film is called Saria. It might be pronounced Saria. It's S-A-R-I-A, so we'll get Brian to clear that up. This is great. It's Oscar season. It's wonderful time for great films to be celebrated. The short films, when I wrote for a magazine, I got to see a number of them. They're always great things. So, you know, out there, check your listings. It's not just LA and New York. Some cities run them, all the nominees as a program, and also the animated stuff. So you do have a chance to see them. It's not just only about the features. You can check out the documentaries and all that stuff. And it's going to be interesting because this is a film that's based on a true story. Takes place in Guatemala. And Brian is also the writer, so we're going to be able to go into some of that. We're going to be discussing his Best Live-Action Short Film nomination for the 2020 Oscars that are coming up, and it's his second Oscar nomination. This is based on a true story, Saria. And hold on, let's see, we have Brian calling in right now.
Yeah, right here.
Welcome, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
How are you doing?
Good.
I'm fantastic. My zone is being on air, so I'm doing wonderful.
Perfect.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it. We know how busy this time of year is for nominees, and so we're very grateful to have you on.
Oh, my pleasure.
Oh, thank you. So basically, we're going to go into, well, obviously, there's so many things going on in the world, and obviously with your last Oscar nomination was you're obviously a humanitarian, and then your feature that people would know, Pirates of Somalia. With all the stuff going on in the world, the thing I always love to know when I meet filmmakers like yourself is why this story? Or actually, sorry, I'd love to hear your version of what the movie's about, because why just read a synopsis when we have the director on the phone? And then I'd love to know why this story.
Well, you know, my mother was an orphan. I was always amazed with her ability to sort of overcome adversity. And literally until I did this film, she never even talked about it. It's just something she just wouldn't talk about. I was always amazed, like certain people that can overcome things, that, you know, I can't imagine anything more difficult than being a kid sort of trying to find your way through the world, arguably a state system or within the church or whatever. It's very difficult. You don't have that base family. And there are those who sort of get through it, and a lot that don't, you know. And so when this story came along, I was just sitting at my my office, actually where I'm talking to you right now, and you get one of those iPhone, you know, updates of news,
right?
You know, every 30 seconds some disaster. And this happened to be one where it was celebrating, or I'm not celebrating, but announcing the anniversary of the fire. And this was in March of 2019, so it's not that long ago. And 2017 is when the incident happened. So I, you know, clicked on it and said, wow, I didn't hear about this. And then I started diving deeper into it. And the further I went from different news stories, you know, started with the New York Times and then sort of worked my way to the New Yorker and then started getting into smaller publications down South America. And I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that I didn't hear about it at all. I couldn't believe that it happened. I couldn't believe that the way it unfolded, that it just, And I looked at these victims and I'm saying, these kids have no voice. There's no voice given to them. And they're not coming from a position of, they don't have, you know, families with money sitting there, or the ability to sort of get their side of the story out there to the world. And, you know, it's come and it's gone. It's gone in the news cycle. And that's that. And we move on. We're on to other problems. And I just couldn't live with that. I literally couldn't live with that. I became obsessed with sort of figuring out how to tell the story. And then within the story itself, the thing that I've found, and even within that world, which is that, you know, romance, young kids, and the idea of love, you know, conquering, or at least attempting to conquer all, you know, sort of plays a role in that film. And there's no greater tragedy to me than never to be able to love, like never have the beat of the age that you could actually feel or experience that. And have that taken from you for many ways, you know, because many ways they had it taken from them. So that was sort of the core message that came out of that piece, you know, as I worked on it.
Yes, I noticed. I've watched it 2 or 3 times, and I noticed the subtlety that you captured that. I mean, the official synopsis, just part of it here, is following the story of two inseparable orphan sisters as they fight against mounting daily physical abuse. And obviously we know that this goes on in other countries. And like you were saying, we live in a world of just news cycles, and won't even get into the whole fake news bologna sandwich. But this story, what interested me was, do you have a background? Like, I'm always interested when I see American filmmakers that like write a film in another language. So like, did you have some kind of background in that? Like, what were some challenges in writing a story for another culture, like with you being an American? I'm always intrigued by that when I see that.
Well, you know, even Pirates and Assad, which was all in Somali, you sort of have to immerse. You have your story, and then you got to spend enough time with that culture to sort of, I think, be accurate to, let's say, how they react to things. You know, every culture is sort of different, you know, and try to be observant as possible. It's not a language thing. It's really a behavioral thing. People behave differently in different cultures to situations, you know. And part of it's just because if they've been in suffered hardship, they you have to survive. You can't, you know, there's two options. Either you fight through it or you die. You know, it's like, it's pretty simple. And, you know, for us, it's like, oh man, there's a line at Starbucks. You know, Christ, I'm not going to get my vent. That's our big problem. Like, what do you mean I'm not been updated? You know, and that to us is a major crisis. And how we react is actually pretty, you know, it's sort of crazy, right? So that you really have to realize what that, but yet, you know, down. And so I spent a lot of time. I mean, I've done, you know, even last year, I mean, I did the last year, we did the first Spanish work ever on the Oscars. It was no subtitles. And so I do all of, I did for Verizon work, you know, because I'm a commercial director too. And it's like, a lot of time sort of within, you know, shooting in Mexico. I've shot a tremendous amount, you know, in South America and Latin America. So you just start to see, like, you know, whether it's down in Brazil or, you know, Mexico, that, you know, you just start to pick up cultural things. Or, you know, you have people here that have come from there, and you just start to realize, like, oh, okay, this is how they probably would handle the situation. This is how this would unfold. And then, of course, in this case, I'm basing it off of essentially, you know, a true story, but creating characters. Then once you get into the dialogue stuff, then, you know, you write that script, but it needs to have, I say, the sort of the correct tone of what your characters would say. It's different than American characters. I mean, if you read that dialogue, it's not quite, doesn't feel American, you know, what is being uttered by the kids. Right. And then from there, then I bring in translators and then they sort of work on it. And we talk a lot about, you know, does this seem accurate? You know, I just do a lot of, is this accurate? Because the worst thing that you could do is create a cultural piece that's completely inaccurate. And you're sitting there with, you know, and with an audience, you say in this case, a Latino audience, was like, this is so inaccurate to the way we would be. That could be the worst feeling in the world, right? So that, you know, went painstakingly for that. And it's a lot of trust with that too. And there's a lot of trust with those around you that you're doing the right thing and you're listening and we're listening to each other. And then the case of this, when going to execute it, when you work in, you know, because let's say I honestly probably the worst Spanish student of all time, like certainly ranked in my school system. There's probably a poster up of me somewhere, or used to be. I mean, I was awful in Spanish. I think I took 3 years of Spanish and got 1 year out of it. And you know, I remember my teachers to make fun of me literally all the time. They call me up and say, Señor Buckley, say the sentence. And literally all the kids would laugh, you know, like one of those deals. Right. So it completely turned me off the light, like saying anything, just so paranoid of speaking in another language after that. Anyway, so when shooting in a foreign language, like once you've translated that script, then the second component is the performances and then dialing those performances in. And that's all about rehearsals to me, like over and over again. So you're cross-surfacing lines to performance lines. We're making sure the emotions are lining up with the words the right way so that the day of the shoot, you're not sitting there trying to. And then after that, it's just sounds, really, to me, poetic sort of sounds. And you're just sort of directing against that. The emotion, you know, not really looking for more than, cause you know, you've dialed in that other part, you know, over a course of a month, you know? So that's how I've kind of worked through that.
Okay. I like that because my mother is Mexican. So my grandfather taught me a good amount of stuff. And I'm one of those where I can kind of understand more and not reply. And so I was very interested in kind of trying to follow along without reading the subtitles and seeing what I was picking up. And I took 3 years in high school and only did bad because who wants to study in high school and not just talk to the girls in Spanish class? So that also, you know, that also led me into something where you had mentioned the different cultures. As a filmmaker, I'm always also intrigued by this with other filmmakers of how this movement, not the Me Too thing, but the way stories being told by one gender about another or by one culture about another culture. Obviously, you just pushed through and told your story. But is there ever a time where maybe there's something not hesitant, but something that you would want to do and shelved? Or I'm wondering how that affects filmmakers who just bypass it, because I've heard so many times where it's like, oh, I have this great story about my mom, but I'm a guy, so I don't want to tell a woman's story wrong. So could that ever cross your mind in any way? Or were you just like, you know, I'm just telling this and I'm not going to pay any attention to it? Or
I'm really bored with being a white guy, so I'm always looking for some other place to go. I always say, the white dude is like, it's so boring. It's like, it's been explored a lot, right? So
right.
I'm all about exploring. So, we're observational in purest forms, like what's like in this case, let's say we did this film, you know, I explored really two worlds. One was the scripted world that, you know, and what happened down in Guatemala. Second world is like, I said, okay, I'm going to cast this and I'm going to cast dual casting. One, I'm going to go traditional actresses and, you know, actors, but primarily obviously this is a female based film. And two, I'm going to go to orphanages throughout Mexico City, seeing if I can find orphans that could play these roles. Okay. Now, by virtue of doing that, you're already into some, you know, sort of experimental situation, because I don't know what's going to happen. I had no idea, like, you know, what the response would be of the orphanages, making sure that the kids, you know, what was their response and how were they going to take this? Because in the end, I'm like, if it does work out the way I think it might work out, it could be like so powerful, therapeutic, and for them, and also give them a voice, which they haven't had in this world to date. And save, in essence, I mean, they all came back that they're helping save their fellow orphans, and that because they were well aware of this whole thing down what happened in Guatemala, the kids were, even though we weren't, it travels through the, you know, through the world, you know, to them. And so, powerful. I mean, I can't explain it. Like that's crazy. Like in terms of, I didn't know, but I knew, like, if you could give that opportunity, suddenly you're plunging into something, and you're being performances that I'm going to be learning from these kids, how they handle something. What would they say? How would they do it? Do they tell me? I wouldn't do that. I do this, you know, like, okay, I hear you. And because, you know, they're not actors and actresses that have grown up on a, you know, more, say more privileged world. They're going to handle things differently. And that was, so that was very, it continues to be actually the whole journey. It's been a journey that I call it that because it's very powerful. That just that component alone. So I find that to be, as a filmmaker or really a storyteller, like the reason why I get up in the morning, to be honest with you. You know, I don't really have a whole lot of interest in going down roads that have been done before. It just doesn't interest me that much, because I just feel like there's so many stories, like you said, they started this whole conversation off with, that need to be told. And time is ticking, and you know, we look at where the world is right now, and it's pretty messed up. And I think we're partially to blame for that. You know, we are industry, right, that we've ignored these other stories because they don't necessarily generate revenue, or they're not, you know, they're not, you know, accessible, and whatever those things are. But I'm, you know, definitely half full guy. I'm like, no, I think it's just that we need to just do a better job of it, or find a way to get, you know, to push ourselves into areas that we're not comfortable and tell those stories. And that can help reshape the way people see the world, see their fellow person next to them. You know, like, I think it can really be helpful. So,
well, that's what I really enjoyed about the film. And I was so beyond stunned, and it being a true story. And you listeners can check out at www.sariafilm.com, sariafilm.com. I was so stunned because I hadn't heard of the story. And again, like we were saying, there's 3 million stories a day that we hear, and it's just so, and you're just so blown away, and you, then it's like I had an auntie that I learned so much Spanish from, and she was from Guatemala. So I was like, oh my gosh, this is like, could have been her niece or her younger kids, or, and so this kind of brings me into, with doing short films. And then of course you guys can go to IMDb, the commercials you've done, the shorts you've done, and Pirates of Somalia I watched again last night. And this ties into, and is it called Saria or Saria?
Saria.
Okay. Saria. Okay. I wanted to make sure I pronounced it right. I'm always intrigued by what the challenges, other than budget, other than the usual production manager, you got more time, et cetera, of what it's like to go short, feature, and then back to short. I mean, what are some of the ins and outs that the people who don't get to do that at the level and pace you do it, what's some insight that you could share that kind of applies to, like, maybe a, you know, a lesson like that you only got doing this short, like as many shorts have you've done, but it's like, had you not done this one, you wouldn't have gotten this one lesson out of it.
First, I mean, everything you do, sort of one thing, you learn these lessons along the way, right? Think about this for a second. I mean, strangely enough, everything has been so strangely seamless on the way everything's held together. It's as if something just, you know, I don't think I've ever had a project where everything sort of fell together. I'll tell you, okay, there was one interesting moment in production, and a very big moment, that, because in film, it's all, whether it's a feature or a short or whatever, it's all about decisions, right? It's all about every day's a decision, right? And these calls seem, in the end, it all seems easy, but in retrospect, you look back and you go, oh shit, I wish I did this or did that or, you know, whatever. And you got to live with those decisions. And we had gone, the one thing we had learned off of the side was just like, you can't have enough prep time when you're dealing with a different culture on a film that, you know, and you're taking high risk stuff, like bringing kids in and never acted before and what have you. And we had gotten it down to a few kids that, you know, could possibly play elite roles. And my producer down there, Susie's like, I'm going to get an acting coach for these kids. Right. And I'm like, well, I've never done it. I literally have never done an acting coach before. I mean, just anything like where, I mean, most of the actors are always kind of, do their thing. You know, you work with them, you talk to them, you talk through the roles and they go off and they, you know, they could, or you can workshop it, but not somebody outside of yourself. This woman, Diane, came in and she worked with them. And so I said, you know what? I'm like, all right, fine. You know, it was one of those, like, literally, okay, fine. You know, if that's what she thinks needs to happen. That moment, as it would turn out, was everything. Like, that moment, I could have just said, yeah, it's too much money. Let's not spend it. Let's save it. Or, you know, we need to put the money somewhere else. Or, you know, I don't think it's necessary. Maybe ego gets involved. And you go like, no, I got this, you know. I was like, no, let's try that. Let's see if she's saying that, listen to what Susie's saying. I've never done that before, but let's do it. And the bond that the little girls formed with Diane was everything. They were together for 2 months, you know, a month and a half, you know, like they became best friends and she became like an aunt or a big sister to them. And it was so helpful on set because there was a lot of emotion, a lot of things going on. And she became a lot more than an acting coach. She was my translator side, right there with me at the side. You could measure like you where we were, you know, any sort of emotional stuff or whatever was going on, making sure everything was going the right way. And, you know, so that was a really crucial piece that never happened before. I think that, I mean, I'm still learning lessons now on this thing. So, you know, we're dealing with, you know, an issue of these girls, the real girls and what their issues are and trying to help them out. And that is an unfolding thing, even as the Oscar spotlight now sort of finds itself on down, you know, now this thing becomes this huge thing that we can shed light on the injustice down there and on what the government has done, and there's no convictions. And that is very disturbing. And with every passing day, we're getting more information of Guatemala, why there's no convictions. And it's very disturbing. So where that is stuff that I don't know, I might look back on that portion of it and going, wow, I wish we knew this earlier or whatever, you know, so I could adjust to that accordingly. You know, however the Oscar wave, as we say, and this hits and it's massive, and making sure that we're set for it. I think we're set for how this is unfolding, but it certainly, you know, that's another thing on top of just a film that you're putting out there. Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things that really, no, that's great. There's no right or wrong answer here. We love talking film and we do 8-hour interviews if we could. That's how much we love film. So, I got into wanting to make films and be in the films because I saw Oliver Stone's JFK and I was 12 and my dad showed it to me. Wow. My dad was 12 when Kennedy was killed. So it was this weird kind of like, you know, he remembers watching it on a TV with my grandpa. And then now he's like showing me a movie about it. I just remember seeing the name Oliver Stone and then being like, okay, cool. This guy like brings up issues. And then my dad's a Vietnam vet. So then Born on the 4th of July was like the way I can kind of understand what my dad went through. So it's what I really liked about what your film did was showing something that not only people that have a specific attachment, but that people... like I was very happy because now I'm aware of this. I mean, we all know there's just such bigger atrocities than like we mentioned iPhones or if we had to sit in traffic or, you know, if you're in New York and the subway's late. So it's really, it's what I love about the shorts that the Academy chooses that they're, I've gotten to cover ones in the past that they do have that strength and they're not necessarily, it seems like they're not just going for the, I have to be entertained. I have to walk out smiling. I hadn't kind of prepared for breaking down and crying. I was kind of just like in the mood to watch a short. And then I was like, oh, I didn't make time to cry for 10 minutes. Like, but so that's what I really appreciated about your film. Now, what I wanted to compliment you on is I can tell from talking to you that you're not one of those filmmakers that thinks you're the king of the world because who was in Pirates of Somalia. So I want to commend you on that and keeping that into the world of staying human and staying cool. So that leads into a question that we ask guests of now that you're down the road, you've done Super Bowl commercials, you're on your second Oscar nomination, you got to direct who you did in Pirates of Somalia. What is something you would tell yourself, whether it was your first day of film school or the first time you were on a set, if you could go back in a time machine, what's something you would say, hey, Brian, what would be the thing you would tell yourself?
Time is, you know, every moment that we have our career, it blows by, you know, like it, your career goes by your, you know, it's so interesting because you have to live and go and do stupid things and live. But yet you have so little time also just to sort of tell these stories because it takes time to put them together and get them out there. I wish, in essence, maybe I was more efficient and I did everything I could to be efficient with my time. But in life, I think, and maybe find yourself, I think a little bit earlier in my life, I think that I was trying to do things I wasn't, and it took a while to find that voice. And you know, I'm fortunate now, my wife's an amazing person, you know. I was thinking about the other day, I was like, oh, I mean, I love my wife so much. And I think she's been around for all this stuff, you know, and it's not a coincidence that she came along and all of a sudden so many, like suddenly you could be yourself. And when you're yourself and feel secure in that, then you can start creating better work that touches others, you know. And it just, unfortunately, it just took a little more time than I anticipated. I wish I could have been more efficient in my life, maybe finding myself or being true to myself. But it, you know, at least it didn't happen when I was on the deathbed. Could have been worse. You know,
No, that's really interesting. I really like that answer. We haven't got that before. We've gotten enjoy the moment or soak stuff in, but I really thank you for being that open about finding or but experiencing and being kind of you to pour into you. I also want to say on a side note, I had recently put down cigars, and so I kind of wish I hadn't watched your other film last night. Had to just tell you that since I knew I was going to be talking to you. I was like, oh man, my cigar guy's one block away. Dang it. Why did I have to study this? I should have just stuck with the short film. It's been a battle anyways. Sorry about that. And I got the biggest kick out of when he's like, you're being a journalist. You understand? Cause I didn't start till I started being a journalist and just being like, oh gosh, I'm just, this film festival just knocked me out. I got to go to the lounge. So what we always wrap with is we always love to know if there's a genre, you know, you have your budget, you have whatever, all the stuff you need, et cetera, et cetera. What would be your like dream genre to do before you're, you know, can't make another film? What's your, like, I just got to do this genre.
That's a good one. I think, all right, I'll say this will be the end of the road. It's not now, but definitely some stupid musical that has a socially conscious sort of message that's just fun. Yeah. Or maybe it's a musical with puppets. I mean, I look at Team America and I go, like, I would say, okay. I think if you could pull off a Team America in your career, then that's it. I don't think there's much more to do than that. Like that to me is sort of one of my favorite. I mean, it's just such a funny movie. It was so bold, you know. It's so timeless. Yeah. I don't know if when the last time you watched it. It's so timeless. It's insane. Like, it's insane. It's so smart. It's just so good. And it's sort of, if you could end up in that world, I think at some point. And I think it was fun about that. Those guys just made that to, you know, I mean, to make a message and put it out there and have fun, you know, doing it. As, yeah. So to me, that would be a pretty cool thing to do, something along those lines. But I guess, and I don't really, it's weird. I don't really think about genres because I don't know. I just sort of think like, oh, this is the message I want to get out there. And now I guess we got how to push it out, you know, like what's the best way to do it, you know? So it's hard for me to get caught up in the genre because I feel like you can move from, maybe because I come out of the commercial business when I'm switching, you know. I mean, I did the March for Our Lives last year, a big piece, you know, that was dead serious, into some stuff that was Super Bowl this year, which is completely, you know, silly. And it's like you sort of switching genres all the time, you know, in essence. So it's just like, what do you want that core message to be, you know, and how you wrap that up. So
I like that. I like that. I've only directed one short, and it was about my friend who was a homeless veteran, and it turned into, I hate the military and I hate the country and I hate the government. And I was just like, no, I just wanted the VA to treat him better. Like, my dad's a Marine. My brother was a Marine. My brother went to Iraq. So it's like, I'm just trying to say, give him bread. Don't just pump him full of morphine. Like, I never said right. I hate the country. So it's just kind of like what you're saying. It's kind of like, it's not a genre. It's just a message of, and I never even said it happens to millions of guys. I just said it happened to my friend. So then the last question would be just the reverse. And since you kind of don't think in a genre, is there a story or that would kind of tie into, I guess, kind of film, aside from pornography, like that you just would not do? And I don't mean bad script. I just mean like you have no interest in a in an action or a crime thriller or noir? Is there something that you would just be like, that's not me?
I'll tell you what, I have no interest right now doing a woe is me Hollywood movie. And there's just a parade of those movies that came along. It really was, I'm this actress and I can't get this part, or, the idea that we focus on our industry as being tragic and in a movie, to me, doesn't interest me, because we're just talking to ourselves. And we do a really good job of awarding those movies because we all feel really bad for each other. But I'm not interested in that right now. That's, to me, like, I don't want to do the woe is me Hollywood movie. So, and that could be in different sort of forms,
Now, what would be an example? Cause I've never really heard it put that way. So what would be a film that you're
Birdman.
Thinking that you're mentioning?
Birdman.
Oh, okay. Birdman. Oh, okay. Okay. Birdman. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I was mixed on that. Cinematography is genius, but past that, I wasn't.
Unreal.
So, yeah.
But yeah, yeah. But at the end of the day, you're like, what's this about? Like, what's his real problem?
Right.
Guys, he's doing pretty good. It's like, I don't know. Like, and it could be, and that doesn't mean it doesn't have, it could be a domestic film, set in Ohio, whatever, but I just feel like when we start talking about our problems, then that's when the rest of the country sort of turns it off and they walk away and they go, well, that's not me. And now you've lost them. And, I so love the industry we're in. Like, we're so lucky, really lucky. And we've been empowered to tell stories, right? We've been given, money, and we've been given, our access, and we've been given all this stuff and lofted by the media. The Hollywood stars get all this sort of incredible, every second that they breathe is documented. It's up to us to tell the stories that aren't about us. Cause I just don't think, enough of it. Let's make it about the people that, or those situations that are going to kind of impact us more. And talk to more people and make it more, in essence, more mainstream. Even though it might be an interesting little movie, it could still be more accessible to the masses to fall in love with theater the way you and I did talk about JFK. I remember JFK. I mean, they sat there and was just blown away by that movie, blown away. In fact, Hank Corwin, who cut that, is a ridiculously gifted editor. Every time he touches a movie, Vice, you look at that movie, oh my God. Like, you're like, what? Inspiring. And it's in a big story. That's not about Hollywood. It's about, it's about something that you can walk away from that movie, Vice, and sit there and go, I was learning. And I'm not a political expert, but I still want to keep doing this. I was learning stuff I never knew before. And I was being incredibly entertained along the way, and I love that movie.
Actually, the cinematography, the cast, oh my God, I could watch it today and still feel like I've never seen it. That's what I saw this great Denzel interview where someone said, do you think being a black man still holds you back? And he said, we're sitting in a Four Seasons hotel being paid to talk about movies. What problems could I possibly say I have? It was just, and so it made me think of what you just said. It's just kind of like, really, like, people are bringing me water. I could ask for whatever I wanted. And you're going to ask me if I have problems. So I really like that you mentioned that. That's a fantastic answer. Because we've been running a record of 45 guests that say porn. So that was the first time I had to say besides porn that you wouldn't do. So we want to wrap it up by once again thanking you for doing this. We wish you all the luck. Hope I see you on TV. I hope this year they show the nominees instead of just frames and no hosts and all that. And just have a safe trip and a wonderful time. And I'm epileptic. I can't drink. So just enjoy some champagne for all of us who can't drink champagne. And you know, thank you for letting us just be a part of this promotional stuff for your film.
Well, thanks, Paul. I mean, I appreciate it. I mean, anything we can do to get this story out there, I think, is great. And and I really appreciate your questions. Very insightful, fun interview.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So, all right.
Take care. Have a great day.
Thanks.
All right.
Okay.
Bye. All right, and that wraps up. Oh man, I just get so, I can feel my heart racing. I love doing these interviews. It is just so much fun to talk with other filmmakers. So that's going to do it for Talking Pictures today. You know my motto, whether it's morning, afternoon, or night, or whatever other time of day there is, make sure and watch a good movie and watch the Oscars. Saria is up for Best Live Action Short Film. Take care, have a great day, and spread some aloha.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, real conversation and movie-induced inspiration.